take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio, where you can find the uncensored truth spoken without fear. A very painful truth is that there is evil among us. If you didn't know it before 2020, you may be very aware that it's more prevalent than you may realize now that we are in the post-COVID era. But long before we were aware that the American three-letter bureaucratic organizations may not actually have the best at heart for the American people, there have always been dangerous people with nefarious intent in our midst. Perhaps we all think we know what one looks like. We think he's a drug dealer on the side of the street or somebody that has a scary look about them. But having worked with domestic abuse victims and survivors for over a decade, I never cease to be amazed at how people cast judgment on the victim as if somehow they are incapable of making rational decisions, like simply leaving an abusive situation as if it's easy as that. I assure you it is not. And it may come as a surprise to the audience that family members and children and spouses of dangerous people sometimes don't even see themselves that they are intimately or relationally involved with somebody who is doing great harm to others. I'm going to give a trigger warning to just alert the audience that today's topic is going to be about child sexual abuse, but specifically about what it was like to be the spouse of a pedophile. And specifically a pedophile who was well respected and a pastor in his community for decades. Yes, it does happen. Predators are among us. And Nurses Out Loud is about exposing the truth and helping people be set free from the bondage of abuse and false teachings and doctrines that may be pervasive in your community churches that could potentially contribute to these predators and abusers finding easy prey among Christendom. Let's make it very difficult for those lurking among us to have any chance at success in the churches of America. The human mind longs to understand the incomprehensible. And why would I say something like that? It may seem to you as you hear the story that's about to unfold with my guests here today, that this is incomprehensible. How could this possibly happen? And over a long time span, but the mind, the human mind, does long to understand what is incomprehensible, perhaps because we do know that we are in a fallen world, and we do know that we want to be able to figure out on our own who are the sinister players in our midst, and how can we protect our children from them? What is it that we've got to make ourselves aware of to make ourselves able to help our children possibly know there's certain things that they need to feel free to say to their parents, or that it's even worth telling to their parent? And what if their parent is the abuser, right? So this involves a lot of things that most of us don't find in your average parenting book. None of us go into a parenting situation ever thinking something like this is going to become your story. You would not marry somebody you thought was going to have a sinister story, but it happens throughout history. So yeah. We know that it is possible for these people who are the beguilers among us. They are deceivers among us, and they are skilled at being so. And even the people closest to them are potentially deceived and gaslit and emotionally altered in such a way. Because a spouse or family member that might be the first person to catch on something's wrong with this particular individual, they've got to do certain things to that individual on a regular enough basis to keep that person from questioning them. And today's guest is Clara Hinton. And I'm bringing her in before I want to introduce to you her son, Jimmy Hinton. And it was her son, Jimmy, that I actually heard for the first time several years ago when I was looking for anybody talking about sexual abuse within, with how to deal with it. And when you realize that it's happened, how to confront it. And I found him, listened to his podcast with his mother, Clara. And I knew that I would love to meet them one day. And now that I'm on America Out Loud, talking news and letting the world know things that we can do to help empower you and help you be set free, I knew this was going to be a guest I really wanted you all to know about. And she is an author, and her book links are going to be in our show notes. So welcome, Clara, for coming here. And thank you so much for being willing to tell your story.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be able to have you.
Well, the honor is all mine. And she and I had a really long time getting a good talking session before we came on to do this show with you all, just to get a chance to hear her story. So her story, I want you to tell them, first of all, your age, if you don't mind, and how long you've been married, and how many kids you have.
Okay, Michelle. At the time, I thought it was the most wonderful love story. John and I went to the same Christian college, a very small one. And as he told his best friend, he said, "I watched that girl walking across campus. And when I saw her, I knew she was the one I was going to marry." And I just clung to that. I thought it was the most beautiful thing ever, that I would be the chosen one.
So, yes. And I asked her, I said, "What is it you think made you something that would later be a great choice for what he knew he was?" So tell them about yourself, because you were quite a popular person in college.
I was, but that sounds like bragging, but I'm not bragging. known to be on our small college campus as a very caring person, very kind. I was friends with absolutely everyone I met, and I was actually crowned Lady of Northeastern Christian Junior College. And that was quite an honor, because the professors as well as the students had to vote you into that position. And I wore that crown with great honor, and I was very humbled by it. So I think John was attracted to that. That was very attractive to him to see, to win this person.
I do too. And that is based on having years of time with people that are domestic abuse victims. It isn't uncommon for them to be notably lovely, notably gregariously friendly, kind, wonderful people that are all the attributes that they are not. And it looks like it may be possible that it's good cover for somebody who knows possibly what's inside their mind. And we do not know what's inside the mind of anybody, even our spouses that we think are good people. So everybody doesn't know what's in the mind of our own, but certainly nothing could have prepared you for what you're going to learn. So you're married, you end up, this man falls in love with you and you get married, and he was pursuing what in college? And how did that change?
Okay, he was pursuing business administration. When we got married, there was one thing he said he would never become, and that was a minister. He said, "Never will I go into ministry." He transferred out to Oklahoma Christian College in year three, and lo and behold, he came home one day, told me, "I've changed my major." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I've changed my major to Bible. I would like to become a youth pastor." And that shocked me, because 2 years before, he said never would he go into ministry. So this was a big, huge change. And it actually required another full year of college also, because he was changing majors like that.
Okay, so y'all are married.
Right.
And now you're married and he's changed his major. As you're getting to know him better and learn about his life, and even going forward to where we are now in 2024, did he ever verbalize any abuse in his own childhood?
No, not at all. Not at all. He came from a very a loving family. His father was a strict disciplinarian, only in that he, like he made him as a child attend church 3 times a week, Sunday school, church, and Sunday evening service. But other than that, there was nothing that would lead me to believe that there was any type of abuse in his family. There were 4 siblings. His mother and father fell in love early on, had what I consider to be a beautiful marriage. Very
And
beautiful.
multiple siblings.
Yes, he has multiple siblings, 4 of them, very close to them. Typical middle class, beautiful family, Christian family. So
Okay.
with no hint of anything odd or different.
No red flags. And I, when we were talking to each other, I let her know that she is in my mom's generation. My mom, but she's younger than my mom. But there are a lot of differences in that time period. And I noticed with my own mother how when she looks at her life, I mean, once you're married, this is for life. This is what we're doing. We're sticking it out no matter what, pretty much is what the kind of motto was that existed in that time period. So you're getting married and you always wanted a large family, right?
I did, yes. I had 2 sisters. One sister died when she was 13, and that grieved me terribly. And I just knew I wanted a large family. I am of Italian descent. So my father came from a family of 13 children. So I just thought that was the neatest thing ever to have a large family. And that's what I wanted. And John and I talked about that. Prior to getting married. And he said, I think that's great. I wanted to live in a farmhouse, actually, just be a Christian mom. That's all I ever wanted, really.
And you now knew that you were going to be a Christian mom with a min, and you were going to be a minister's wife, correct? Now, how long into your marriage before he got his first job as a minister?
He got that first job as a minister within 3 months of graduating college. So it'd be about 2 years after we were married. And he became the youth pastor of a very large congregation, which that was kind of like a big feather in his cap to be hired by that congregation. He went through the interview process, did great, and we were thrilled that he was in that position.
And how long did that position last?
It lasted less than a year.
Okay, so
With
tell the audience what happened and how it unfolded.
okay, this was a shocker. I was home on a Sunday evening. He had an elders meeting, which was held at the church. And when he came home that evening, he walked through the door and he said, very matter-of-factly, I've been fired. And I remember just sitting in shock looking at him. I said, what do you mean fired? He said, I've been fired. He said, there will be no severance pay. They will not help with moving expenses. I'm fired immediately. And I just was lost for words. And I said, what in the world happened? He said, well, the elder said I was not a good communicator, that I needed to be a better communicator with the youth. And to be honest with you, I thought you don't fire people for that, but he convinced me. He just said no. He said they feel they need someone better who is a better communicator. So
So
that
that
ended up rather abruptly, immediately.
okay. So, did you have any children yet at this point?
I had one. I had our first daughter, Michelle. Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the status, because what people need to realize is that women, especially this is way back in the 60s, right? Seven.
Actually, I have to stop and think,
When
Michelle.
was it?
71, 1971.
Okay,
Okay.
so you are home with a daughter. Who is how old when this news happens?
One. She had just turned 1 year old when that happened. I
Okay.
was devastated. We had no money, period. No money. We had college loans, no money. And nothing saved, absolutely zero. When he said we were fired, he had been fired. I was like sitting in shock, saying, well, what are we supposed to do? where are we going? What happens now? I remember him calling his father immediately, and his father knew of a job in Pennsylvania. We were at the time in Oklahoma City. His father knew of a position that just had opened up in a church, a little country bumpkin church, and he told John about that. And he, of course, got on the phone right away, and that's where we ended up.
Okay.
Leaving the big city, coming and driving cross country. We had no belongings. We packed everything that we owned in a little Toyota Camry. Our biggest belonging was our daughter, Michelle. And it's we literally had nothing. And drove up to a church unknown, to people unknown. And I cried the entire way. This was not a happy beginning to our life together.
No, it was not. And you're already a mama. So let me ask you this. There's some things that were unique about him when Michelle was born. So it sounds like a wonderful, helpful thing, but why don't you tell them that it was something that was unique about her birth, the day she was born. And from then.
Born, John was so beside himself that we had a little girl that he actually got a speeding ticket, a pretty good speeding ticket, actually, driving to the hospital. Those were the days, remember, when daddies were not able to be with you. And so he got the news by telephone, and he sped all the way to the hospital getting that speeding ticket because he was so thrilled with a little girl. Normally, I think a lot of dads, their first child, it's nice to have a boy, but a boy didn't even come on his radar. He wanted a little girl.
So once you got this sweet little thing home and he lets you know how he wants to be, what kind of parent to you?
He wanted to be the kind of parent that got up early in the morning to take care of this baby. He said, "You sleep, I will get up." He got up between 3 and 4 every morning, set his alarm for that time. He said, "I will not wake you. I'll get up with her. I will change her. I will diaper her. I will bathe her. I will do all of that for you," which as a new mom, I thought was wonderful. Why not? I thought that was the greatest gift ever too.
And you think about it, mothers out there listening, I mean, who wouldn't think this is the most wonderful thing that could possibly happen? There's not some book saying that this may be a red flag, but it actually is. That will be revealed later in the story. So he continues with that as a practice. How long before the next child comes, and is it a boy or girl?
Well, the next child came along 2 years later, and he was a little boy. Interestingly, there was not the same thrill. In fact, I did not mention this to you when I talked to you previously, but I laid in the hospital 4 days without a visit from John, without a visit from my husband. I had zero visits, actually. His mother came up to help at the house with Michelle, but he chose to stay home. He said he wanted to fix up the house for me. He painted the kitchen while I was in the hospital, which I cried. There again, I didn't understand. I cried the entire time. He did not come to visit me at all. And this is our new baby.
Yeah. Most importantly, not that it's just your new baby. His woman that he vowed to love, honor, protect, nurture, and all these wonderful things involves the reality and acceptance that she just pushed out your child. And you, as a person that supposedly loves that person, is supposed to be there concerned and showing concern and care and protection, advocating for that person. And what Clara did is notable that the audience needs to recognize is that she wept. And she wept for a good reason. There was something her soul and spirit knew was grievous, and her heart knew this was wrong, but she wasn't in a situation where she had any choices. So he continued to justify being home with Michelle, the child that was already born, and painting the house. And you come home and you've got how many more children that are boys before another girl is born?
I had four more boys. So there was a daughter and five boys all in a row.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you this about him as a father, caring for the home. Like here's the pastor. He's standing up in front of the pulpit. What evidences are you seeing as the woman at home of the kind of character that this man was manifesting? So care for the home. Let's just go with that for the moment and things at the home.
He was good at home. He was actually, as I'm sure Jimmy told you when you talked to him, a great dad to the boys. He taught them how to bait fishing hooks. He taught them how to look for crayfish, things like that, outdoor stuff with the boys. And as far as the home, he was, I'll say, okay. He was okay, probably better than average at that time.
Okay.
As helping.
Yeah. So you're feeling like things are going good. I've got a man that's very involved with his children. He's very respected in the church. How do you feel if you look at that season before the second girl is born, that as a mom, that you feel like this is working out pretty good? Is he still bathing the daughter only? Is he bathing the boys, et cetera?
It was funny because the boys he taught to shower, I think that was a boy thing. You go get a shower, that was their thing to do from little up. They showered. For the girl, for Michelle, it was always a bath. And we had a bathroom off of our bedroom, and he would take her into the bathroom there, and which, at that time meant absolutely nothing. He said, would say, I'm going to read, read for a while she bathes, let her play in the tub, whatnot. The boys got the quick showers. So either way, he helped get the kids ready for bed. I was still a happy camper. He was helping.
Yeah, and your life is full. You have five children at this point, six children at this point. So life is moving along, and then along you start having more girls. How many girls did you end up having after that?
I had two more girls and then a boy and two more girls. So four more girls after that,
So you had a
with one.
total of five girls and six boys, and you did lose a baby, you told me about, and that's something you published a book about. Why don't you tell us about that?
I did lose a baby. I delivered a stillborn baby. It would be. There were the two girls, then a boy, and then there was a stillborn baby boy that was born. And I grieved terribly during that time. That was probably the darkest period of my life, aside from what happened in our marriage later on. But
How do you feel like he responded to that death?
very non-emotionally, very non-emotionally, very detached. I, to this day, cannot understand how a father can be like any parent can be like that. I grieved so badly that I pretty much shut down to life for a period of almost 2 years. I was really sunk into a depression, a very bad depression. It was awful, just terrible. He actually, it was like he detached from everything and life went on. Life went on for him.
And some people would say that, okay, men deal with it differently. She delivered the child. And most men out there that may have even had a wife have this situation may think, well, I didn't deal with it the same way she did. But the wife is the interpreter of the spirit of the house. And she's saying that it felt like he was detached. And what we don't often talk about is when we think of intimacy in marriage, we always assume it may only have to do with sexual intimacy, when actually there's a form of other intimacy called emotional intimacy. And a lack of emotional intimacy means that there's no sharing of suffering or thoughts or ideas. You don't feel like you have a companion that's actually collaborating with you on struggles, perhaps. So that when that's lacking, it does tend to cross over into sexual intimacy. How would you say he did do on emotional intimacy in general in the marriage at this point?
Terrible. I guess that sums it up. Terrible. It was a very, very detached intimacy. I often would cry. And I said to him, I just feel like you don't understand me. You look at me. And I would be crying. I'd wait till all the kids were in bed. and just say, look at me, please, you know, look at me. And I, this is odd to Michelle that you have to say this when you're married, but he said to me, if you make me a list of what I should do, I can do it. And I remember it was at our 10-year wedding anniversary. I said, are you kidding me? Make you a list, like kiss wife goodnight, hold hands for 15 minutes, sit with wife on couch. He said that would really help me. So,
wow. Very insightful that he lacked the ability to have a true connection with the person he appears to be clearly intimate with, because he has already quite a few children, and things are starting to change. So your heart knows what's going on, but the truth of the situation and women in this situation is you don't have a career. Even if you were thinking there was something significantly wrong, you don't even put it in your head as a possibility, because you are drowning in the responsibilities of motherhood and being the pastor's wife. Is that a fair statement?
That is very fair. I would have had no other choice. I felt I could not leave. I could not do anything. It's a very stuck feeling. You want more. I felt the biggest thing in our marriage was neglect of me. He did not neglect the children. He was a wonderful dad to them, the boys especially. But me, I felt I was neglected. And as a wife, I felt like I should have had some place. I would often ask, where do I fit in? Where do I fit in this marriage?
Yeah, I want to make sure the audience hears this before we break for the second half, because what I'm going to bring to your attention and what Clara is going to share with you after the second half is going to blow your mind. You do not want to miss this, because these little factors that she's giving up about little nuances that a wife is aware of isn't going to explain fully the mind of this man, but it is little red flags that her spirit was aware of that was revealing something was definitely wrong here in this person. But what was it? It was never something anybody would be prepared for. So we're going to have to cut for the break for an intermission for our sponsors. Don't forget to check out our online store. These are serious matters that we're talking about today, but we just want to remember that the only reason we can bring you stories like this to you is because of our sponsors. And in the America Out Loud shop, there's multiple products that you can find for yourself that are going to be brought to you at a significant discounted rate if you do use our coupon code that is Out Loud. And be sure to check out the Nurses Out Loud sponsor, which is the ASEA products. And there's definitely more information for you there in the store. And we'll cut for a break and be right back in just a moment.
It's time and this is what.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill, it's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code Out Loud.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Lean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's the perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
It's time and this is love.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud. This is Nurse Michelle, and I'm here with Clara Hinton, who's telling us quite a sad story, and I want to get right back into it because there's just so much to say. It is probably 10 books worthy of being written for the sake of posterity, so that we can discover what it is that can be done to make sure that these the dark and sinister that are among us are exposed and found out early. Okay. So here we are. I want to make sure that the story catches back up. We have a mother of 11 children, a pastor in a church who is also having a second job on the side. But I want to go back and remind you all, because this kind of fertility isn't as common in this day and age, but it does still happen. I have a lot of friends with large families, but though she has 11 living children today, this woman also had 6 miscarriages. And one of the first miscarriages was right after her husband was fired from his first preaching job. And I want to just validate that for a moment, that in this story is a story of a woman's journey through a nightmare and the impact it's having on her as well. So she's in a marriage and there's a lot of things that are saying, I'm not really a loved wife. I'm not feeling like I have a person that's emotionally connected to me. I'm losing babies and he's disconnected from that reality. I'm having babies and he's not even showing up sometimes at the hospital. I just pushed his child from me. So there's a lot of red flags going on here. But by this point, a woman is just aware that she's not loved well. That's really the biggest red flag, but something big's about to happen. And that is going to involve a shocking thing revolving around his second job. So why don't you tell us what his second job was and a few red flags about it before the big shocker happened with that job?
His second job, Michelle, was selling insurance. We couldn't live off of preacher's salary. Obviously, they don't get paid real well, especially from a little country church. He had a job as selling insurance. It was long-term care insurance to retired school teachers. He got himself into some trouble with that. I went to withdraw money from the bank one day and realized that I was being called upstairs by the bank president and did not know what was going on. And he said, Mrs. Hinton, I have some bad news for you. The FBI came in, seized all of your money, and froze your account.
Wow.
And was in shock, not knowing what was going on. I remember walking out of that bank being numb, went home, called my husband immediately, and he just was calm as a cucumber, said, don't worry about it. It's all going to be okay. He came home and explained to me that everything would be all right. It was not all right. There was a federal investigation for 6.5 years before an indictment of 6 men plus my husband. However, I turned the tables a little bit and became an informant with the FBI against John, my husband, in exchange for them saying they would not put him in prison because I begged and pleaded. I did not know how I would survive with, I had never worked outside of the home since I had been married. I had 11 children. I didn't know how we could make it. So for most of that 6.5 years, I met secretly with the district attorney, with the FBI. I would listen to him on the telephone, listen to what he was saying, listen to how he mocked his clients when he took money from them to the tune of $5.5 million. They were bilked out of their money. And I lost at that point all respect for who I was married to. I knew I no longer knew that man.
Right. So here you are having yet another reveal of who he really is, because you get to be clandestine and hear the way he actually is talking on the other side of John. So here's another thing that you told me about. It was a Mother's Day. Why don't you tell the audience about something that was a red flag about a Mother's Day?
This was a huge red flag, and to this day, I don't understand it. It was Mother's Day. I was pregnant, obviously, and we were actually at home on a Sunday morning. I had gotten up, baked a ham, made brownies, all that good stuff, and John was busy in the morning fixing a gift for me. He wrapped it beautifully. Sat me, it said, sit down in a rocking chair, gathered all of the kids around me and said, we have a gift for you. And I was very emotional, being Mother's Day and going to have a new baby very soon. So I opened the gift slowly and lifted the lid up. It was a beautiful box wrapped with a beautiful ribbon. And to my shock, there was a skull of an animal in that box that had been dug up that morning. And in the eye sockets of that skull were little purple wildflowers. And what do you say? How do you respond to that?
If I recall, he had not inspired any of the 11 children to do something for mom that day, which is a role of a father to do for his children, to encourage the honor toward the mother. But that didn't happen. And then you get to church. What happens?
We get to church and there was a little girl sitting behind me and she tapped me on my shoulder. And she leaned over. She said, Mrs. Hinton, I bet you received so many gifts for Mother's Day. And at that point, I had cried all the way into church. I remember just staring out the car window and softly crying, thinking, I don't believe this. But when she said that, it just hit me so hard. I ran down to the basement in church and just sobbed my eyes out for the rest. Interestingly, we were studying Focus on the Family, a video series on how to, that particular series was on how to treat your wife. And that was my Mother's Day that year.
Yeah, so. And that stands out. And I want the audience to let that sink in, that a woman who's loving her children and finding her fulfillment in the happiness with her children, it's Mother's Day's here. And the mind of the man was to give a gift that only a psychologist could possibly analyze and find out what the sinister thing is behind that. It's getting a peek inside the mind of this man. So there's something else that happened while he was an insurance person. He got called about having to have his vehicle towed.
Yes, I got a frantic call from him one afternoon and said, hey, I need help. And I said, what's going on? He said, I'm stuck. I said, what do you mean stuck? He said, I'm back in the woods and I'm stuck. There was ice back here. It had been snowing and it was icy. And he said, I'm stuck and I can't get out. I'm going to need towed out. You're going to have to come get me and we're going to have to get towed out of here. I said, what in the world were you doing? You know, why in the woods? You're selling insurance. He said, oh, I had packed my lunch. I needed a place to just sit quietly for a while and eat my lunch. And, I drove over 2 hours to go get him, to find him. He was way back in a deserted, it was a park area, a state park, and had driven back in the middle of winter time back there and had gotten stuck in the ice and snow.
And yet there's nothing to know about why this really happened, but there's every reason to be suspicious that this is something going on. But what is a mom of 11 to do other than drive to rescue her husband and accept his excuses that he gave her.
Yes, absolutely.
So
and you just, at that point, you just accept, I think. You stop questioning and just accept, because that's how life is for you. That's
yes, all. The abnormal had become normal, but that was your normal. What else did you know? You'd lived it your whole life since you've been married to him. So here you are, this expose, you've undercover with the FBI, what a story. And you, the church finds out about what he's been accused of. How does the church respond to his sentence, the fact that he's this criminal, supposedly?
The news hit the newspapers when the FBI came in. There were 3-inch headlines for 3 states around. Minister Bilks, elderly, the church stood by him 100%. 100%. They got together and they did a letter writing campaign and sent letters to the district attorney's office begging on behalf of John that this was a kind and a wonderful man, that this was their pastor. He was honest. They were certain he knew nothing about frauding people. And they were 1,000% supportive of him. He remained preaching the entire time.
Yeah, so I want everybody to pay attention to that. The next time you hear somebody say that there is abuse about, and they're accusing somebody that you think is an amazing person, that you need to remember stories like this so that you know that people who are doing evil are hiding it by other behavior. So that's an evidence of it. Now, when he loses that job as insurance, that's what's providing. So what kind of job did he choose to go get to help pay the bills?
It's a job I never heard of, Michelle. He said, I want to be a manny. And I remember saying, what? He said, a manny. I said, what is a manny? He said, it's a male nanny. He had applications on every place that you could think of for, to become a male nanny, a manny. I still have trouble saying it yet to this day because it was so unbelievable.
So that was a couple, how long leading up to the biggest bomb yet?
That was 2 years leading up to the big bombshell.
Okay,
here.
So you are aware you've got a husband who lies. He's been stealing money and defrauding people. He's not providing well. It's like y'all can barely meet and make ends meet. He's emotionally detached. But also there was something, y'all went on a trip and he showed something about indiscretion and with a youth group. The church put him in charge of the youth group to go take him on a trip. Why don't you tell the audience that?
The first time that I was appalled at him in a way that I went and talked to some church members. He had 6 teenagers around him. He was the one leading the group. It was a youth retreat, weekend retreat. And before they left, he did something that shocked me, and I remain shocked to today. He dropped his pants and bent over and mooned them. And as quick as lightning, pulled his pants back up, and it was like nothing. I was in a state of shock. The teenagers, I guess it's a typical teen thing to just giggle and laugh. I mean, they were 12 and 13 year olds, and they thought it was the coolest thing ever to have a preacher moon them. And I thought, I don't know what's wrong with this man. There's something really wrong to do that.
Right. Your gut is telling you, your conscience is saying something's up, but you're in this situation. What do you do? The church sounds like they completely trusted him to be the full supervisor of the children on this event. And he went on with those 6 children by himself, correct?
Yeah, he took a big van and he went alone with them. Yes.
Okay, so I just want to leave the audience with evidences of indiscretion in the way that he is doing certain behaviors. So there's something I just want to address quickly that she has said to me off on our break is that, when we discover what kind of a man that he actually is in his mind, what does a woman married to him experience sexually with a man that has these kind of deviant things in his mind? So here we have a woman who's birthing his children. Clearly there is sexual activity in the marriage because you have 11 children and 6 children that you miscarried and 1 that was stillborn. And you said to me that it was more like it was a mechanical calendar scheduled kind of behavior, and that there was nothing like a woman. People forget that women are sexual creatures as well. And that there's times that off schedule, a woman may just want to just, be very loving and affectionate and pursue her husband and be the aggressor. But what would happen in that kind of situation that you, if you tried to just be off schedule?
When I tried to be the aggressor, it didn't work. He was not able to perform. It was on his terms or no terms. It was every 3 days, I knew there was no foreplay. There was nothing to lead up to it. It's just, that's when we were having sex. That was it. And it was sex. It was not an emotional experience. There was not that bond that I think all women dream of having that with their husband.
And I think that it's fair to say that men who have a healthy perspective of women and love their spouses appropriately, they actually want the emotional bond as well. But you were living a life during a generation that really didn't talk about these kind of things. It wasn't outward. It wasn't in the public like it is now, right in our faces. But now it's so much in our faces, but it's a subject that the psychologists that are hearing this is worthy of expounding on, that there's something going on that this woman, this is her normal. This is all she's ever known with this man. This is what intimacy is with him. So what does she know to report? Because nothing's been said to young women. Here's some red flags within marriages that if these kind of behaviors are showing up in the marriage, it could be a red flag that something is wrong. It's not saying that he's a pedophile, but it's saying that something is definitely wrong within the marriage. Now we're leading up to the big thing that happens, and you already in your conscience know something is very wrong. You make a decision that it's time for you to separate yourself. Tell us about that.
Right. I refused to sign our tax papers, and that was the biggest step I ever took in my life of kind of disobeying my husband, so to speak. And he let out a scream that was, it almost didn't sound human. And he was a man who kept his cool all the time. He stayed calm. He was patient. But that night, I literally barricaded myself into the living room because I was so afraid of the scream that came out of him. He just was not the man I knew at that
right.
point.
So you'd heard him on the phone now, and you know he's lying, he's stolen. The things are all coming clear to you. And there's some little behaviors that I forgot for us to address. You were never allowed in his office. And
right. It
was a locked off place.
It was. From the time we were married, I was never permitted in his office. I was never allowed to use his car. He said his car was his office on wheels. So there, you know, I had rules, so to speak, of which were his privacy. In our home, I never held the key to the one room that where he had his computer. I was never allowed.
And you told me that there was a porn situation where he was caught by a child looking at porn. He justified it as, I'm about to do a preaching message on porn, and that's why he did it. But he was using your computer.
He was using my computer in my office. And my daughter walked in unexpectedly and caught him. And she said it was the most vile of anything she had ever seen. He froze, panicked, couldn't get X out of that, and had to get her to do that for him.
Yes. And red flag. It's like she's putting the puzzle together. You decide you're going to separate from him. And what does he do?
He didn't do real well. That's when he became the Manny, took that job as a Manny, and it was downhill from there, actually.
Did he move out?
He moved out. Okay. He lined up the church to move him out. He handed me a piece of paper, said, this is what I'm doing. It was on a Saturday morning. There were 10 items. He said, I'm taking your KitchenAid mixer, I'm taking the bed, I'm taking the two chairs, the couch. He had it all written out, and I said, well, what about the house? What about the house payments? What, I had two children left at home. He said, I don't care what you do. He said, you can live in a tent.
That was unbelievable to hear that said. So he's really starting to expose who he really is because he's been found out.
Yes, absolutely.
So you start going to counseling and very soon around that time, finally getting some counsel for yourself to take care of you, because this is a hard journey that you're on. So what you get, go into counseling, she's starting to help you. And as we're leading up to the biggest news, what happens? You have a daughter. We don't have to identify who she is. We can just say that a child came to you, a female child came to you.
I was sitting in my office late at night. I got an email from my daughter, who was two doors down in her bedroom. Subject line said, of what is a pedophile? Description of a pedophile. I sat, I read it. I had no idea what she sent that to me for. I walked back to her bedroom and I said, what in the world is this about? And at that point, her little heart just broke. And she told me what had been going on for years in our home. And that was the beginning of the end of our family as we knew it.
Right. And this is a tragic moment where Jimmy Hinton's name comes into the story, because he's a pastor at this time. And he's the logical deduction for you to call and bring in to comfort his sister. This person is 20 years old now. The abuse has the typical age of abuse was what age in the house?
Beginning really from young up, birth up to 10, age 10.
And is it true to say that it was discovered that it was all of the girls in the household?
Yeah. Yes.
So he had five daughters and he was molesting all of his daughters in his home and over his whole life. Okay. And then we find out that it goes beyond the household.
It went beyond the household. There were also three of my granddaughters molested. And there were several little girls from church, a total number of 23 that we know of for a fact. And it is estimated from the photos found on his computer that there were at least, I think he had 230 counts, Michelle.
Yeah, so, and he is now serving time.
He is serving a life sentence in prison with no chance for parole at all.
So, wow. Justice has come. But once he gets, it makes public news, you get a call from that first church that he got fired from. And what did you learn?
I learned something that shocked me and also opened my eyes up. This person said, I was one of the youth that he was the pastor for. I feel like you need to know why he was fired. He was fired because some of us went and told he was doing things to the teens in the church. And then, Michelle, it all clicked. Everything clicked at that point. From the time my daughter told me, I believed her immediately. Then I get this verification. Everything. Doubt that I had, every one of those dots all connected.
And a story that just blew my mind about Jimmy is that it was not something you needed to go verify with dad. You didn't need to go ask questions. You didn't need to find out if there was another truth. They went to the police and they sought justice, and justice was served. But if that church had first been appropriate, and if they had actually said to the police what they should have done, report a child abuser who was in the name of a minister harming children in that church, we are talking about a completely different outcome. So we have to hold them accountable for their failure. And any church leaders out there listening, you need to hear this, that this great destruction that came to five girls in a family who have been significantly impacted, their lives are completely changed because their father did something completely wrong, evil, and dysfunctional to them, and they are innocent, and they were harmed. And this church had the power to seek justice, and they did not. So I'm going to make sure this is so much more to say, and her story is unbelievable. We're going to make sure her books that are called Silent Grief, The Heartbreak, and The Hope, and Hope 365 Daily Meditations is in the bookstore. We're also going to have Jimmy's book that actually details the story of what he learned about his father's mind. But Clara, before we part, you know, what would you like to leave with the audience for to be continued? Or I'm hoping she's going to publish a book that really is something that the world needs to hear so that we can learn how to identify these people early.
Michelle, I'd like to just say, go with your gut and just be totally aware when something is off. I think women have this innate sense to tell something is off, follow through with it somehow, you know, just kind of start connecting the dots early on, because lives can be saved that way. Honestly, they can. And I appreciate you having me here to spread this message, because no matter what a person looks like on the outside, if there are red flags, there's something going on the inside.
Right. No matter what their position or status is in society, preacher, you have to know that red flags mean something. They need to be investigated, and you need to protect the victims. And in many cases, a mother of many children is a victim, as are her children. So there's so much more to say here. Her bravery in coming out. She has a blog. Tell us the name of the blog.
FindingTheHealingPlace.com. Okay. There's a lot of details in that blog.
Much more for us to expose that cannot be done here. And I want you all to check out this blog. And if you are a person that has suffered any kind of childhood sexual abuse, then I want you to find the hope and help that is available at FindingTheHealingPlace.com. And know that somebody like Clara Hinton is out there who is bold and brave and willing to say the stories that are hard to say in a generation that is very corrupt right now, but sadly among Christendom wants to hush and pretend like these dark secrets are not happening in your congregations, but they are. And we need to be brave about exposing them. Thank you so much, Clara.
Thank you.
It's time and then-